Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us this morning as we talk about the comparison of hybrid and diesel cars, trucks, and SUVs. Our guest is James Bell, editor of IntelliChoice.com, which has released its fourth annual survey of eco-friendly vehicles. IntelliChoice.com's survey pits hybrid and clean diesel vehicles against their gas-powered counterparts in the seven most important cost of ownership categories. You can find out more at IntelliChoice.com, and we're pleased to welcome James Bell to the program. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. And Jim, in the last three surveys, you focused only on gas electric hybrids. And for this model year, you've included clean diesel vehicles and also indicate that diesel could be a game changer. How is that?
Yeah, well, you know, anybody who follows the automotive industry knows that diesel is a big player in other markets, especially in Europe and a little bit in Asia as well. It's just the U.S. market has been a bit behind the curve on that. And when we started to see the low sulfur contented clean diesel become available in U.S. fueling stations, for a lot of us in this business, that made us excited to think, wow, we might actually get some of these great vehicles that have been only in Europe. And that's exactly what's come to pass. And so what we at IntelliChoice wanted to make sure was that we are including vehicles that are of this nature against the hybrids, because right now people in the U.S. think about alternative fuels, they automatically think hybrid. But I personally believe, as an automotive journalist, as well as now have data to back it up from my site at IntelliChoice, that if somebody's looking for something to be an alternative to the typical gasoline engine car, clean diesel is a great place to look.
If you'd like to join the conversation with James Bell, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And, of course, you can join in on the online discussion at wpr.org. You scroll down to online community, click there, click on Larry's picture, sign in, and post your answer to the question, if you could drive a hybrid or a clean diesel vehicle, what would it be? It starts out at wpr.org. How many hybrid and clean diesel vehicles are offered in the 2009 year?
We looked at, there's about 39 gasoline, electric, or hybrid vehicles. Of course, from a lot of varying different manufacturers now, I think, well, folks probably think hybrid, they automatically think Prius from Toyota, but actually that's unfair. There's a whole slew of new hybrids that are out now and will be coming soon. And then on the diesel side, the first kind of wave of them, if you will, totaled 12 altogether.
All right. And how many of the 51 deliver a cost of ownership that's somewhat or significantly lower than gasoline versions of the same vehicle?
We're looking at about 34 of them are outstanding compared to their gasoline equivalents. And in some of these cases, it makes it a little bit tough to test. You know, I just mentioned the Prius on this. The Prius obviously doesn't have a non-hybrid version to compare it to. So what we did is, based on EPA ratings of the interior size and relative content and relative price, we looked at doing the against the Camry gasoline engine, the non-hybrid Camry. So it's pretty conclusive that when you bounce that gasoline version up against the non-gasoline version, whether it's hybrid or clean diesel, you're making a pretty wise economic choice. And in the case of driving a new modern clean diesel, you're probably driving the vehicle that's more fun as well. Diesel, for any of your listeners aren't aware, is really known for its torque. And we as American drivers, when the light turns green or we can go from the stoplight or stop sign, we often think it's horsepower that's giving us that rush of acceleration. But that's wrong. That's actually torque. And that's where diesel engines are just, some of them in the new BMWs and Mercedes could probably pull a tree out of the ground. They got so much power.
We're talking with James Bell, the editor of IntelliChoice.com, which has released its fourth annual survey of eco-friendly vehicles. And let's start taking some calls. We'll go first with Jack in Eagle River. Jack, what's on your mind today?
Yes, good morning. I have a couple of quick observations as a 2004 Prius owner. First of all, the mileage drops considerably from a little over 50 to a little under 40 in the winter. I've heard various explanations for that. And in that connection, possibly there's a lawsuit pending, class suit maybe, about the mileage misrepresented in the Prius. And so I called the company, and I was going to give my experience, and I never heard back from them, so I don't know if anything came of that. And I have one other observation, if you have time.
Which is?
Oh, okay. The second one has to do with the way people drive the Prius, it seems to me. They'll either drive extra fast the way most people do because they're getting that great mileage, so what the heck, or they'll try to maximize that mileage. I happen to be in the second category. I try to get as much as I possibly can, keeping a delicate foot on the accelerator, et cetera, and then I put it on cruise as much as possible, and that also increases the mileage.
Do you do hyper-miling where you drive 30 miles an hour in order to get the best gas mileage?
Yeah, that can happen. Well, I'll drive the speed limit, which, of course, is almost unheard of.
Yeah, I just hope that you would drive the speed limit because, you know, someone driving 30 in a 55 or 65 mile an hour would be unsafe.
My driving habits are trying to aim in that direction of maximizing the, just to see how many miles I get per gallon.
Mm-hmm. Jack, thanks very much for those observations. And James, do they square with what you hear?
Well, you know, I'm also the owner of a Prius. I owned it before I joined IntelliChoice, so I'd just like to make sure everybody's aware of that. It was a decision I made individual of my professional life. And I find that, Jack might want to know, it's not about necessarily being light on the throttle, but it's something that's called pulse driving. That's the way to really get the most mileage out of a gas electric hybrid like that. And what it means is, as you're mentioning, you know, you don't want to be unsafe and not following the speed limits. When I merge onto the freeway, and by the way, I live in Los Angeles, so a lot of times these freeways are you know, six lanes across and moving at pretty good speeds.
Right.
You just want to get up to the speed that the average car is doing out there, or where you feel comfortable, and accelerate up to that speed, you know, almost as fast as you can. And then when you get to that speed, that's when you just start to feather it.
Okay.
And that's really the way to get maximum fuel economy, because one of the points that came up there was, you know, sometimes a Prius driver has a bit of a reputation of being a little too cautious, or maybe, in order to prove that they're doing great things for the environment, they're going to drive extra slow and everybody behind them has to follow suit. And I personally, you know, I don't embody that. I'm doing speed limits or higher, and I'm still getting close to 50 miles per gallon using this technique called pulse driving. So I think there are some stereotypes that need to be kind of washed away over time.
We have lines open for your call at 800-642-1234. Our email address, talk@wpr.org. We had an email from Peter in Fort Atkinson, who had seen a few articles referring to a compressed air engine being developed in India by Tata Motors. Can you affirm or debunk the information? It seems compressed air could be a great method of locomotion.
I've seen these, strong rumors myself. Nobody's in a position to confirm it. There's also an Israeli company, I believe, that's been developing something along the same lines. There are some great ways of providing propulsion to a vehicle that are not connected to fuel whatsoever. But what you have to realize when you start chasing some of these dreams is that we as American drivers, we like to be able to jump in our car and drive 300 miles to grandmother's house on a whim if we need to, as well as some really tough commuting in Los Angeles or Chicago or New York. So the degree that a vehicle has to be tested for durability and changes in its climate and lifestyle and demands really puts a strain on some of these alternative power plants. And I think there will be a place for it in the future, but I think we're probably not quite ready to put the old nail in the casket for the internal combustion engine just yet.
What are the major factors that you evaluate the cost of ownership, and how long are we talking about operating the vehicle?
Well, we look at it about over a five-year course of life, and we're looking at all the factors that people, when they go shopping for a vehicle, they probably don't really think about. I mean, let's be honest, buying a car is a very emotionally gratifying experience usually.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of sex appeal to it. It's got that new car smell. You can't wait to take it home and show your neighbors. So we at IntelliChoice, what we try to do is say, look, while you're shopping, at least stop, hold fire, and think about some of the points that are going to matter once that vehicle loses that new car smell and gets a couple scratches and the kids spill a bunch of Cheerios in the back seat, et cetera. And those factors, in no particular order, are depreciation. That's a big thing that people don't really realize, that they're buying a vehicle for, say, $30,000 today, but down the road, what's it going to be worth, and are you going to be able to keep some of that value back? Mm-hmm. Certain vehicles depreciate at a much slower rate than others, and okay. That's what we help track for people. We're also looking at fuel cost. Obviously, that's a big factor. I personally think fuel prices are going to start to climb their way back up again over this next year or so, and so you want to kind of hedge your bets and buy a vehicle that's going to be as smart as possible when it comes to refueling down the road. A lot of people found out that your ATM card or your debit card has a $75 limit on it at the fuel pumps. And nobody really knew that until we hit $4.50 a gallon. And so you're looking at your fuel cost of ownership is something that should be decided well before you buy the vehicle.
When you did the study, what were you using for a per-gallon pricing?
I'm sorry, can you say it again?
What did you estimate when you did your study that the price of gas would be?
Well, we modulate it all the time. We do, I think for the purposes of this study, we did in the $2.60 to $2.70 range.
Uh-huh.
But on the site, I offer to your listeners to go to IntelliChoice.com because we do something called Best Deals of the Month, where we take into account the very latest fuel price information, the very latest depreciation, the very latest resale value, insurance cost, all the different factors, and then recalculate a lot of this data to help people find the best values. But yeah, for an annual study like this, we do our kind of best guess at where it sits at that time.
And you expect prices to rise?
I do. A wise person told me recently that, because of the global economy and its downturn we've gone through, obviously it's meant that some of the emerging markets have also slowed down, China and parts of Asia and India and so forth. But what it's also meant is that as these economies start to come back on, they're going to have their demands rising, as well as the fuel companies themselves have not been making the investments in new infrastructure and new production because they've been watching their bottom dollar as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be an essence or a possibility of a bit of a perfect storm, unfortunately, where we might see prices rise again. And that's why looking at the cost of fueling a vehicle is very, very important, and I personally feel should have a big impact in what vehicles people buy, because if they don't, they're going to then, let's say it's the folks who bought an SUV a couple of years ago with a big V8 because it was cheap. Well, then they decide, wow, this thing's killing me at the fuel pump. I need to sell it, but now the resale value has actually dropped out on it. So people are ending up in a really bad economic situations, and that's where analyzing cost of ownership is vital, I believe.
We're talking with James Bell, the editor of IntelliChoice.com, which has released its fourth annual survey of eco-friendly vehicles. IntelliChoice.com's survey pits hybrid and clean diesel vehicles against their gas-powered counterparts in the seven most important cost of ownership categories. We've gone through about three of the categories, and we'll go to the others, and we'll take your calls as we continue here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sarah Carroll is our on-air producer. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller, and we're talking about the comparison of hybrid and diesel cars, trucks, and SUVs with James Bell, the editor of IntelliChoice.com. Let's take some calls, and we'll start off with Rhonda in Sullivan. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello. I have a Prius since 2004, and I get the same mileage as everyone else that's talking about it. Now, what my husband found out is if I turn the air conditioner off, I can get the 50 miles per gallon easy.
And if you have the air conditioner on, then you would get about how much?
Like 40, 44, something like that. It depends, how the kind of driving you're doing.
Right.
But it makes a difference. I didn't believe him at first, but it does make a difference. So
you ride with the windows open, do you?
No, I don't like the windows open. I like the air conditioner on.
Oh,
and we go down to Florida quite a bit, so I really have the air conditioner on.
Yeah.
But that does make a difference. And I used to have diesel cars. My husband always would buy an old station wagon with diesel, and it would scare everybody when, I would start it up. It was so loud. But I am interested in the new diesel cars. I thought I would try that next.
All right, Rhonda, thanks very much for that observation. Do you find the same thing in your driving around Los Angeles, James?
Well, unfortunately, I have to keep the AC on most of the time because we don't have quite the climate you might be having there in the Wisconsin area. But I will say that where the Prius is very smart is that it uses an electric compressor for the air conditioning system. So it gives you the best opportunity to get the least drag on the engine and get the best fuel economy by running the AC. But because it's an electric AC, it obviously is pulling from the battery and such. Then when the battery gets to a certain point, then the gas engine has to turn on to recharge it. So, yeah, it'd be nice to drive without the AC, but in certain markets, I have friends in Phoenix who sure couldn't do that either.
No, that's true. Scott in Mountain is next. Hello, Scott. What's on your mind?
Well, I also am a Prius owner. I drive about 90-plus percent of my time on the highway, and I get over the – it's a 2007. I've had it not quite 3 years now. Over the lifetime of the vehicle, I get 46.4 across the board, mm-hmm. winter, summer, city, highway, doesn't matter. Several of your guests have said, there are certain things you can do that impact that a little bit. I found the biggest thing is if I carry a canoe or anything on top of the vehicle that interferes with the aerodynamics, it really drops off pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But before I bought the vehicle, I was very interested in the diesel Jetta. This was in 2007, and I couldn't find one. I suspect it's an issue of the proper diesel fuel being available at that point, and I just kind of like a little more details about that, where that stands currently, and also I'd appreciate it if you would address the issue of what modification, you hear that you can just pour vegetable oil in a diesel vehicle these days with no modification, so I want to talk to somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about, whether that's really appropriate or not.
So, all right, Scott.
All right, well, let's see. First off, I'd just like to say that we've had three Prius owners now, and all of them know exactly what mileage they're getting. And I applaud all of you, because that is a curious factor. And one of the, a lot of my friends who know I have my Prius think, oh, you're not having any fun then, because you can't go fast, it doesn't handle very well, et cetera, et cetera. But no, getting that ultimate fuel economy and tracking that is almost like a video game kind of fun of its own. And so, thumbs up to all you Prius drivers out there. We all know what mileage you're getting, and good for us. Secondly, on the point of the Jetta, when you were looking for that vehicle before, it was not available because of exactly what you're saying. We didn't have the low sulfur content fuel available at that point. Volkswagen was running a 45-state legal Jetta turbo diesel prior to that was really using, and I know some people at Volkswagen have said it was almost like having a tractor engine in there. It was a real old tech diesel engine. It did okay, but it was a lot more clattery and noisy and smoky than, much more in line with what people are probably expecting of a diesel vehicle. Since then, now we have the new fuel available, and therefore Volkswagen is bringing over their latest and greatest high-tech European-style diesels as well. So as far as availability, they're out there now. In fact, in our survey that we just did, the Jetta turbo diesel has actually outdone the Prius when it comes to overall cost of ownership, which the Prius has been an absolute rock star of this, the analysis we do at IntelliChoice, since it came out in 2004. So the Jetta turbo diesel is a great option. The only downside of it is that they are selling as many as they can bring into the country, and so you probably wouldn't be able to get a good deal from your local dealer right now because he's just happy to have one in stock. But by all accounts, and my biggest advice is if you're in the market for something and you're looking, maybe hybrid isn't for you for whatever reason, goodness, go drive a diesel. You're going to love it, especially the ones from the Volkswagen Audi group.
How about Scott's question about pouring vegetable oil into the diesel and just, without any modification?
No, my understanding is that it takes additional level of purification before you can do that. I know about some people out in California that will go to Chinese food places and donut shops and collect the grease from those, their tanks that they're just going to throw away or incinerate anyway, and they'll take that and process it, clean it up, and then run their diesel vehicles with it. Now, what's curious about that is when you're running it on vegetable oil or oils, they're non-petroleum based like that, it makes a very nice smell out the tailpipe. If you ever get a chance to be behind a vehicle and you smell a very delicious flavor of of French fries. Well, that means that guy ahead of you is running a diesel with vegetable oil. It's a nice little benefit. If I owned one, I'd have to run a pipe into the passenger cabin as well so I could have that smell.
All right. Thanks very much for that call. Let's go next to Jim in Green Bay. Jim, what's on your mind?
I'm also a Prius owner. My wife and I bought one in 2007. We drove it so far about 65,000 miles, and we found that as long as we buy fuel from a supplier, from a gas station that does not add ethanol, we get much better mileage. We'll get an average about 54, 55 in summer, and never less than 46 in winter. So it makes a difference where you buy your fuel nowadays, too.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Now, that's, I got to be honest with you, I thought I knew everything about hybrids, but I wasn't aware of that. I don't know what the mix is that I can get out in California on ethanol petroleum, but I'll have to look into that. Thank you. It's hard to teach me something new, and you just did, so I appreciate that.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. We are talking with James Bell, the editor of IntelliChoice.com, which has released its fourth annual survey of eco-friendly vehicles. You can go to IntelliChoice.com and see the results. You can download all of it, have it, study it. James said, the Volkswagen Jetta diesel certainly rates well in cost of ownership over this five-year period. Although I just have to ask, Volkswagen has not had the greatest record when it comes to dependability with its gas-powered engines. What's to say that the diesel is going to be any better?
Well, two things. Number one, you know, without getting too technical here, a diesel engine doesn't have a spark plug the way a gasoline engine does. It actually works on the compression of the diesel fuel on the oxygen. It kind of self-ignites. Therefore, because they have to be built at those different levels of compression ratio, a diesel engine is actually, you know, more overbuilt and sturdier than a gasoline engine, just by nature of the combustion process. So that's one place we find that they'll last much longer. Also, they run at much lower RPMs. They create a bulk of their power between, you know, idle up to maybe 3,000 RPM.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, in order to get the most power, you don't need to rev it up. In fact, if anything, you don't want to rev it. You want to keep in that nice little under 3,000 range.
Right.
So between those two factors, you know, the engines are known to last a lot longer, and we see that in our analysis because they hold their value so much better. You'll see versions out there with, you know, 100,000 miles on them still getting, you know, better than half of what they were originally sold for. So definitely, and then on top of it all, that Volkswagen has been selling diesel engines in probably 60 to 70% of their passenger vehicles in Europe for the last 20 years. So they've got a ton of experience in this range that we as American drivers have unfortunately just been kind of boxed out of until now.
We talked about evaluating the cost of ownership and the seven factors that go into that. We mentioned depreciation, driving off the lot and having it worth several thousand less than when you turned on the key. You've got fuel costs, and you expect prices to rise from where they are now. There is financing, maintenance and repair, retained value, insurance and taxes and licensing fees. And when you add it all up and divide it out, why, you get the ranking of how well this will do over a five-year period.
Exactly. And again, you know, as I said earlier on your show here, all those points, they're not very sexy. They're not what people think about when they go buying a car unless they're exceptional, smart, IntelliChoice type buyers, unfortunately. And that's exactly why we have this available, this information available on the site. We do all the homework for them. We've got every vehicle on the market, all 1,800 and some different models, available with a full buy trim level analysis. And so we go through and do all this math to let you know, okay, and here's a good example. There are certain vehicles that might cost you more to purchase. Maybe it costs you another $2,000 to actually buy the vehicle, but over the course of owning it, compared to a similar vehicle, you might save $3,000. So now you're actually going to be up $1,000 at the end of the time you're going to own the vehicle. So in that case, you know, a smart buyer would say, where am I going to hold my investment longer? Which vehicle is going to reward me in ways than other than just getting up and down the road? that might be worth an extra $12 a month or whatever your payment might be, and that's what we try to do. We help identify those real diamonds out there that hold their value best, are cheapest to run, get the best fuel economy, cheap to insure, all the things that, again, people generally don't think about when they go to buy a car and probably should.
James, you give away this information. You don't charge for it.
That's right.
How do you sustain yourself?
Well, two different ways. You might see sometimes car companies will use our information in their advertising campaigns. Honda and Toyota, Lexus, General Motors, a lot of the different companies will use IntelliChoice data to help support the vehicle's value for potential buyers. So
and
that's
so
one way that we
yeah.
collect a little bit of revenue there. And it's just based on the data that we're putting on the website anyway. So there's no favoritism or awards or anything kind of curious there.
Mm-hmm.
But the main way that we make revenue at our site is in advertising from the manufacturers that that recognize that somebody who's buying or shopping for a vehicle at IntelliChoice.com is, number one, a smart buyer, and number two, they're probably very close to making an actual purchase decision. You know, you might go to a site like MotorTrend.com or Edmunds.com or something like that when you're just kind of starting the buying interest process and just kind of shopping around and having fun. But when you come to my site, you're probably down to your last two or three vehicles. And I like to caution people, it's a great place to go, IntelliChoice is, just before you go out to the local auto mall and actually start driving these vehicles and take on those tough salespeople. Because this is hard information that can help you really make a smart decision. And like I said, it might help you realize that, you know, when the salesperson is trying to talk you into a certain trim level or a certain vehicle over another vehicle that is going to cost you a little bit more money, well, guess what? That might also be the smartest economic choice, and that's where IntelliChoice can help you, and that's what the manufacturers know, that if somebody's at my site, they're a smart buyer, and manufacturers want to talk to those people. So that's how we keep our lights on, and that's how we keep all this data free to anybody who wants to go check it out.
1-800-642-1234 is the call-in number, and Gene in Ashland is next. Hello, Gene.
Hello. I understand Mr. Diesel invented the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil. Is there a book on the whole story of the diesel engine, the invention, and about what year was that?
Oh, my goodness. His name was Dr. Rudolf Diesel, and I would think, and don't quote me on this, but it was probably just around the turn of the century when he did his work on this, maybe the very start of the 19th century. And I'm sure there are a thousand books on this because it's a technology that just, you know, at one point it was in kind of competition with gasoline engines, but now I think going into the fact of how we need to have alternative fuels and get off of our gasoline dependence, it's now complements quite nicely certain people's driving habits. So definitely jump on Amazon or something like that and look up Dr. Rudolf Diesel, and you'll probably get more information than you need.
And you're just about right on that date. It is 1894 when he filed for the patent for the diesel engine.
Wow, I tell you, I got circuits in my head that I don't know how they know this stuff, but if it's got something to do with a car, I seem to know about it.
You're right there. Gene, thank you so much for the call. And Julie has been waiting the longest in Mondovi. Julia, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a few items I'd like to just comment. We own two Honda Insights. They mm-hmm. were 2002. We still own the one. Unfortunately, we sold one. They're a two-passenger, three-cylinder. And again, driving, you know, how you drive, like you say, pulse driving, does really make a difference in your miles per gallon. But I can't believe they discontinued that in 06. I know they're bringing it back, but they're not going to bring back that smaller version. We got, well, right now he gets, and this is in the L.A. driving, 65 miles per gallon. In Wisconsin, in the warm weather, we'd get 65 to 68 on the highway.
Yep.
Probably 60 in the city and 55 in cold weather because it does affect it. But we also owned five different Chevy Geo Metros, all three cylinders. Actually, three cylinders. The last one was a four-cylinder, which was a mistake. But they always got, and those were gas vehicles, always got 50 to 55. And they were four to five passengers. And they also discontinued that on the three-cylinder. But it had good pickup. We did 70, 75, you know. driving on the interstate with no problem. So I'm not sure why they discontinue, you know, cars like that. They're excellent commuter cars.
All right, James.
To the Insight that you mentioned there, the Insight is a vehicle that was very expensive to produce. It had a aluminum chassis, a lot of great aerodynamics. So it wasn't the cheapest thing to produce. It was more of a vehicle that Honda could go to market with and say, look, we're a real design leader here. When it comes to the Geo Metro, it was really a victim of the marketplace and people getting excited about big SUVs because I also feel, and I know this is a bit of a contradictory thought for a lot of people, but we pay too little for fuel in this country. We are a very spoiled country, and if there were more drivers like you who thought through a little bit and thought, you know, I don't really need that V8-powered SUV because I'm just commuting back and forth up and down the road, a vehicle like a Geo Metro gets me to work safely, not a problem. Then I think we would have vehicles like that again. We had too low of fuel prices, and everybody rushed off and bought pickups and SUVs. I think we're now coming back the other way around on that, and you're now going to see a great deal more of smaller four-cylinder cars coming out. Or I'm actually at a Ford event in Detroit right now, and they're showing us four-cylinder engines here that have turbocharging, which will put out the power of a V6, but the fuel economy of a four-cylinder. So you really have no compromises. So I think you're going to see that kind of small Geo Metro vehicle coming back.
Julia, thank you for your observations. And somebody who does need a larger truck is Susan in Oconomowoc. Susan, go ahead.
Hi. I have a situation where we're on a farm, and we've got horses, and we need to transport them in a trailer. For everything else, we've got Honda Civics that get 40 miles a gallon. But when we need to transport the horses, we need something that's got the power. And
yep.
we have a 97 Ford F-250 that needs to be replaced, and so I'm looking for something that's going to be as green as possible but can do our job.
Well, then you might want to have a look at in a General Motors or a GMC or a Chevrolet store at the Sierra or Silverado hybrid pickup trucks. They get about 50% better fuel economy than the standard V8-powered pickup truck, but has because it's electric, it has got all the torque and towing and capacity that you're looking for in a standard gasoline power truck. Now, they're a little bit expensive. But again, it's where the IntelliChoice can come through and say, well, the vehicle that's more expensive to buy is actually going to reward you over time. And so, yeah, I would suggest in your case, have a look at those hybrid GM pickup trucks. They are smooth to drive, very comfortable, very classy, and they hold their value very well, too. So that could be a perfect option for you.
Susan, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. And if you'd like to join in the few minutes we have left, the number is 800-642-1234. How does the Toyota Prius Hybrid stack up against the Honda Civic Hybrid in terms of retained value?
Well, the Prius, until this last survey, like I mentioned, with the rise of the Jetta, the Prius has been the absolute rock star. It holds its value much better than any other vehicle on the road, and to a pretty high standard as well. I mean, several percentage points better. The Civic Hybrid is a wonderful little vehicle, nothing wrong with it whatsoever, but it just hasn't caught the fancy of people and the energy of the buying public the way the Prius has. And therefore, they only sell, you know, maybe 20% of what they'll sell of the Prius. So it just doesn't hold its value quite as well. But that doesn't make it a bad buy, just makes it a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. All right, to Ed in Dodgeville next. Ed, what's on your mind?
I just had one point. I tuned in late, okay? But you were talking about running a diesel on vegetable oil, going and getting it and running it. Here in Wisconsin, we pay for a lot of our roads with road use tax. So you got to keep in mind when you're telling people to do that, I have a Ford F-250 Power Stroke, 1999. It's a 7.5 diesel. I can go and run that on vegetable oil right now. I'm getting 18 miles to the gallon. I run it from Dodgeville to Madison daily, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But these people that are getting away with road use tax, remember the state of Wisconsin back 15, 20 years ago, they thought that they were going to go green and they were going to use LP.
Okay.
They went LP. I bought one of those vehicles at an auction, a state auction, when it had 95,000 miles on it. The state found out that when you run the vehicle on LP and you use the road use tax, it wasn't that cheap to do it. So, you know, be careful when you're telling people to avoid taxes. If you get caught in a big truck, because you could go to the gas station. You could buy off-road use diesel or on-road use diesel. The off-road use has died, on-road isn't. You get caught with that, I think it's like a $5,500 fine. So these people are just avoiding taxes that are running this. And I could do it today. I could do it tomorrow. Go to my local bar, pick up the oil from them, refine it myself. Don't have to pay road use tax. I could run very cheaply down the road.
Is that true in California as well?
You know, I got to be honest with you, I'm not sure, but our, you know, we're just finally able to sell clean diesel vehicles in California because, like I said earlier in the show, that diesels prior to this were the advent of low diesel sulfur content was just 45 state legal. So we don't have a lot of experience with running diesels out in California. It's still kind of a new frontier for us, but, you know, I think anything that helps you avoid dependency on petroleum is probably worth pursuing, and it sounds like maybe the state governments are going to have to catch on to that at some point as well.
And the final call goes to John in Janesville. Hello, John.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have an import, and I drive up to Minnesota every 3 months, and I was able to get just the regular gasoline without being diluted with the ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
I would consistently get 31 miles to a gallon. When I had to fill up again in Minnesota to come back to Janesville, and they used the ethanol, I would get 29. This has been going on for over 3 years. And it just seems that when you mention ethanol additive cutting down the mileage on vehicles, it's a sacred cow. These auto call-in programs don't seem to touch it.
Well, you know, ethanol use is—it's unfortunately it's where the government's gotten itself involved because they're trying to support you know, different growing patterns and farmers and the whole lobby there. I won't get into that mess, but that, you know, when you put an ethanol product in, you're getting less power per gallon, so to speak, less energy density in that fluid. So that's why your mileage is going to drop a little bit. But yeah, there's a lot of things that I think the government could look at from a fuel regulation perspective. And I think the sooner we look at things other than ethanol as a way to cut back our general petroleum dependency, the smarter. It's ethanol is not the the silver bullet for smartening up our driving needs.
James, thanks very much for spending time with us today. I know you're a busy guy there in Detroit, and we appreciate the time. People can find the results of your fourth annual survey of eco-friendly vehicles at IntelliChoice, IntelliChoice.com. Again, thanks very much for being with us today. And we will continue by talking about the possibility of high-speed rail. That'll be tomorrow, and you can go to the online discussion at WPR.org. We'll ask the question, should Wisconsin have high-speed rail service between Madison and Milwaukee? You can go ahead and post your reply now, and then we'll talk about this tomorrow at 11:45. Coming up in just a minute, Dan Rowe of Tamworth, New Hampshire, the owner of the Written Word Autographs, and we'll talk about autographs and historic documents here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.